Imagine being a 15-year-old boy on vacation in Pakistan, kidnapped by armed soldiers and transported thousands of miles away to a place called Guantanamo Bay. It's fiction. Or is it? Ana Pereira is a former teacher and author of an award-winning young adult novel called Guantanamo Boy. The details of the story are fictional, but its most important element is true. There really are teenagers imprisoned at Guantanamo Bay. Pereira tells Anne Strangechamps she still remembers the day she learned that.
It was autumn of 2006. Guantanamo had been open since January 2002. And I remember being completely appalled and shocked. It's bad enough that grown men had been abducted and detained and abused without recourse to the law. But to hear that children, juveniles under the age of 18, had also had this experience was too shocking for words. And so the title came to me immediately. I'm a children's writer. I should write a book about this, and I'll call it Guantanamo Boy. It was an immediate reaction.
I think a lot of people don't realize that children have been held at Guantanamo, maybe still are. Who are the children and how many are there?
At the time when I was writing, it was hard to get hold of the exact number, but it was a well-known fact, and there had been reports of children, such as Omar Khadr, the young Canadian boy who was picked up at 14. He was still in Guantanamo in 2006 when I heard that, and many others from around the world.
What was it about this story that you thought would be especially powerful or especially appealing to a teenage audience?
Well, in my experience, young people of all ages hunger and thirst for stories which challenge myths that they've been told are the truth. And there seemed to be a myth at that time that torture is something that can be justified. And in my view, it can never be justified. How can you justify harming another human being for whatever reason? So I wanted to hold up a mirror to the insanity of this prison, challenge that myth, and try and ignite a feeling of compassion and healing and peace.
Well, tell me about your main character in this story, Khalid. Who is he and how does he wind up in Guantanamo?
Well, I very carefully picked and thought about who he should be. And he's a 15-year-old boy. He's a second-generation UK citizen. His parents were both immigrants, one from Pakistan, one from Turkey. And he lives the life of any other ordinary British teenager. He likes playing football. He's got a crush on a girl at school. Who wouldn't have at that age? And he enjoys playing computer games with his cousin, Tariq, who he's never met, who lives in Pakistan. And he goes on holiday to Karachi with his family when his grandmother dies. And during that time, his father goes missing. And Khalid goes looking for him. His mother sends him out to an address. And he gets caught up in a demonstration in the street. And he, later on that evening, he's sitting at home. He's back online on his auntie's computer, talking to his cousin, when men, masked, hooded men, break in and abduct him, throw him into the back of a van and take him to be questioned. But you don't know why he's being picked up. Is it because of his computer game that he plays with his cousin? Is it because of the demonstration? Is it something to do with his father? You don't know. So then you're taken on a journey to Guantanamo. But having said that, there's lots of humour in the book and lightheartedness. It's not just a horrific tale of abuse.
And Khalid, although he sees and experiences dreadful things, he stays a teenage boy through the whole book.
He does. Because certainly from my experience of teaching, I was always aware how resilient teenagers are, how they're able to sort things out in their mind and get on with their lives. Certainly it's something I remember, that you couldn't hold pain for very long. Somehow you'd find yourself laughing about something before long. And so I wanted to use that resilience as a means for him to hold on to reality.
What kind of issues came up for you in writing this as a story for young readers? I mean, you must have had to think about how gritty you wanted it to be or how you wanted to deal with the possibility of torture.
Yeah, that's a fact. What I didn't do in the first draft, in fact, was have the waterboarding scene. I didn't want to put Khalid through it. I grew too affectionate. But the editor said, you know, we have to have this scene. I remember sitting down writing that. I tried to stay as true to the experience as possible out of respect for those detainees who'd experienced these awful conditions, sleep deprivation, starvation, extremes of temperature, physical abuse, mental abuse. I knew if I wrote it, I would have to look at all the dark matter there was. Eyes closed, their hands pressing down on his shoulders, Khalid hears the jug being filled with water at high velocity. A cloth lands on his face. More hands hold it down so that he breathes in the smell of gauze, bandages, and at the same time a trickle of cold water pours through the cloth and down to his nose and mouth. At first, Khalid coughs and splutters, gags, sucks the cloth into his nose and mouth, which suffocates him. Struggling, his hands jerk and tremble to get away from the straps, and he tries to vomit, groaning, but the rough hands clamp him down more. A split-second memory of Dad's ghostly face passes through his dying mind as water floods his face. Dad, help me, don't let them kill me. A flicker of breath sits there, just that bit out of reach. His mouth opens to grab it, battle for it, spitting, gurgling the pouring water, but his neck goes rigid with the effort to breathe, with the effort to cough, as lush of water hits his ears. Tell us what you know, the madman shouts.
Was that the hardest scene to write?
It was a hard scene to write. What I did was sit at the kitchen table with a few pieces of paper, and first I wrote by hand, whereas most of it I wrote straight onto the laptop, and I just sat down and wrote a scene. I knew the elements I wanted to make evident, and they were that this is a child. We're in an inhumane situation. We are going to have to follow him through something I hope that nobody will ever have to experience. And I'm going to have to look at the characters in that scene as if they all are beings with hearts and souls and brains that are able to show compassion, but in this situation have no means to do so.
You're writing as a fiction writer about subjects that have been covered extensively in the news and other places. What do you think the craft or the art of fiction brings to a subject like waterboarding?
Well, as you say, the subject of Guantanamo is surrounded by millions of newsworthy facts and statistics, and they change from day to day as more stories develop. But the stories that we remember in our heads, to do with our families, to do with our own lives, they stay in our heads because they have a power that facts can never have. They allow us to empathise, and once we know how to empathise, we know how to feel compassion, and that's the power of stories.
Now, we don't have a lot of time left, but I really want to highlight your latest book, also for young adults, and also dealing with a very contemporary conflict. The novel is The Glass Collector, and it's set in a part of Cairo that's probably safe to say very few tourists ever see.
That's a fact. It's set in a place called Mukattam, which is a slum area on the outskirts of the city, where over 70,000 members of the Zabalin live, and they collect and recycle more than 80% of Cairo's waste. I was sent an article about the Zabalin, and I thought, this is fascinating. I knew nothing about these people. How do they manage to exist in these circumstances? They live, breathe, sleep, and work amongst the most awful conditions. And I thought, I'll have to go out there and see it. So I went out there and hired a translator. And the story came to me because I saw a boy on a cart full of rubbish, and he was in the middle of mad, crazy traffic, and he was in a state of, I can only describe, as supreme bliss. He looked absolutely at peace. And once I saw his face, I knew I could write the story.
So with both these novels, you're telling stories about difficult truths to young audiences. How do you keep your audiences and your books hopeful, or is that important to you?
Yeah, it is important. One of the things that I think it's important to do in the world that we live in is to reflect the world that we live in. But my main ambition is always, always to look at how we are able as a human species to be on this planet and to share what we have and to show that we're capable of amazing things, magnificent things.
Ana Barrera is a former secondary school teacher. Guantanamo Boy is her first young adult novel. Her second, The Glass Collector, will soon be published in the U.S., and Strange Champ spoke with her.